Of course, I thank the organizers for the opportunity to speak here today. So everything I'm going to talk about that's new is joint with Jozo Hong, who's a student of Bernstein's in Tel Aviv. So to begin, let me once and for all take the field F, which is algebraically closed, and we'll denote by T its character for the whole talk, which is arbitrary. Now, the point of the talk is to, I guess, relate three different objects. They're pretty classical, the symmetric group, SK, the general linear group, GLN, and the Katz-Fourier algebra, which I'll denote by G. So here, G is SLP hat when P is positive, and SL infinity, and characteristic zero. So of course, SLP hat is the Katz-Fourier algebra on a Deakin diagram, which is a circuit on P nodes, and SL infinity has a Deakin diagram, which is just a linear line and infinite in both directions. So of course, the relationship between a symmetric groups and a general linear groups is about as classical as it gets. This is a Schur-Weil duality. And between the symmetric groups and G, this Katz-Fourier algebra, there's a relationship that's newer, and it arises via categorification. And I'll explain this in a moment. And this has been on for quite some time. And what I want to do is take this relationship here and use it as motivation to describe a connection between G and GLN. So this will also be a connection that arises as a categorification. And hopefully, by the end of the talk, I can sort of take this cartoon that relates about these three different objects and actually write a precise diagram which really encapsulates all these three relationships together at once. So let me begin by motivating what I want to do here by looking at this connection between G and the symmetric groups. So part one of my talk is this motivation. And so this is the connection between G and the symmetric groups. And I want to start with the observation made by Lescaut, Leclerc, and Thibon, I guess papers from 96. And what they observed is that, before I do that, I need a few definitions. Sorry, so let me back up a second. Let me just set a few things down, definitions and notations, before I get going. Sorry. I just need a few things. So let me set lambda be the set of all partitions. Okay. And let's take, so if I have a partition lambda living inside big lambda, I think of this sort of as this Young diagram. And so for instance, if I have lambdas, say 4, 3, 3, 1, then I have this diagram. Two, three, one. Okay, like this, and then I can talk about the content of a box of this diagram. So the content of the box in position ij. So here I'm dividing this notion of content is just j minus I modulo p. So here's p is the characteristic that's fixed throughout. So for instance, these boxes here have content 0, 1, 2, 0, 2, 1, 0. Okay, and I want to introduce this notation. If I take two partitions, mu and lambda, and I write an arrow between them, so mu goes to lambda like this, this means that lambda can be obtained from mu by adding a box. So for instance, I can have, this mu, and I have an arrow to this partition here. I've added a box at this point here. And I can color this, say, by I, if this is adding a box of content I. So this here, this arrow here will be labeled by 2. That's pretty standard stuff. And so now let me just define two representations. So definition one, the Fox space. So as a vector space, I'm going to take this combinatorial definition of the Fox space. It's just P the direct sum over all partitions, and that's edges defined for vector space with basis labeled by these partitions. And I want to define a G action on this space. So Gx on S via well, I'll just tell you the action of the Chevalier generator is sufficient. And so EI V lambda will be the sum over all mu that can be obtained from lambda by deleting a box of content I V mu. And so conversely, SI V lambda will be sum over all mu that can be obtained from lambda by adding a box of content I. And so it's the fact that this defines a representation. I think the Katz Moody presentation generated by EI FI.
But does it include identity matrix?
No. Yeah, I just take the EI as an FI.
And how about central extension?
I have a central extension, but without the D.
You take one dimensional or infinite dimensional?
One. Sorry? Then I don't do any, it's just an integer, some integer. Yeah. So if P, sorry, I should have said this here. That I keep on making this omission. Here I'm doing an example for P equals 3. Sorry. yeah, so if I take the P equals 0 case, then these would be minus 1, for instance. Sorry, completely forgot to mention that. So where was that? So yeah, I just want to say this defines a representation of G. Okay, so that's for me the Fox space. And let me come over here. And then definition two, what I'll call the basic representation. So I have inside my Fox space, I have this vacuum vector labeled by the empty partition. And I take the representation that's generated by this guy inside Fox space, and I'll denote this by B. This is some submodule inside F, and this is an irreducible representation. Okay, so that's the definitions I needed to start. Okay, so now let me start with my motivation for what I want to do. So not like what I wanted to be before. So I want to talk about this connection between G and the symmetric groups. And again, what I was trying to say earlier, that I want to start with this observation of Lescu, Lequerc, and Thibon, which is that the crystal graph, what they notice is that the crystal graph of this representation, this basic representation, is the same as the Sokol branching graph for the symmetric groups. So let me say in a few words what this means. So the first thing you should notice is that this, well, the first thing I want to say is that the left-hand side, the crystal graph of this basic representation, is something about the representation theory of G. And on the right-hand side, we have something that's related to the representation theory of the symmetric groups. So a priori, this is not something that obviously should be related, but you notice that these two graphs, which are highly non-trivial, are exactly the same. So let me say a word about these graphs. So on the left-hand side, we have this representation B, and I think it was Kashiwara who first understood how to discovered how to attach to B some combinatorial data called the crystal structure. So he first did it using the theory of quantum groups, but other ways to do it now. And so this in particular consists of some set, which I'll denote by B. This is some some set that's n bijection with a basis of B. And then there's these things called Cachoeira operators, which are usually denoted EI tilde, FI tilde. These are some operators from the set B to where B units in some extraneous element, which is called zero, and some other data, which for me is not important right now. Some very canonical way he associated this structure. And from this crystal structure, you can construct a graph called the crystal graph. Right, so the vertices of the crystal graph is the set B, and the edges, if you have, so it's going to be a directed graph and colored, so we say an edge between B and B prime is colored I, if and only if Fi tilde of B is equal to B prime. It's a way to, a very canonical way, construct a graph from this representation, which in some sense is, I guess, you can think of it as a combinatorial skeleton of the representation. And certainly, you can recover the representation up to isomorphism from the graph. You can do a lot more. There's a notion of tensoring these graphs together, which controls the tensor product of the representations and so forth. So that's on the left-hand side. Let's talk a word about the right-hand side. So let me define set RK to be the category of representations of the symmetric group. And let me just emphasize here that we're working over this field F, and so the interesting case is the positive characteristics. And of course, you have some restriction functor from RK to RK minus 1, as usual. And so a very natural question will be, say, given some sigma prime in RK, or just sigma, an irreducible representation, what happens when you restrict it to SK minus 1? What can you say about this? And in this generality, this is still an open question in positive characteristics. So this is still open. But some very spectacular progress was made by Khrushchev in the 1990s. And so the question that Khrushchev looked at was a slightly simple one. And it was the following. Instead of just looking at this restriction, he asked, what is the Sokol of this? So Sokol means, so recall that in positive characteristic, this category RK is not semi-simple. And so you can ask for the maximal semi-simple submodule of this thing. That's the Sokol. And what Khrushchev proved, among other things, so in particular, he proved that this is multiplicity free. So just like you would expect from characteristic zero. And he determined exactly, given given sigma, which we know how to parameterize exactly, combinatorics comes in to parameterize the Sokol. Okay, so you can construct a graph from this also. And so then you have the Sokol branching graph. So here, the vertices are just the union of all. So IRSK is my, like we've seen before, is irreducible representations of SK up to isomorphism. I take all of them together. These are my vertices. And then my edges, I'll say, so if I take sigma, say sigma an irreducible of SK, and sigma prime an irreducible of SK plus 1, I'll put an edge from sigma to sigma prime if and only if sigma occurs in the Sokol of the restriction of sigma prime to SK. So I construct a graph from this data. And so these, as you can see, these two graphs come from completely different places, and this remarkable observation was they're exactly the same. So you might, at this point, wonder, well, here I have a colored graph, and here I don't. So I didn't specify how to color this graph, but sigma, the way you color this graph by these same colors, I guess in this case Z mod PZ, is, well, sigma prime lives in some particular block here, and you can block of this category RK plus 1, and you can ask that sigma occur not only in the circle but in the projection to a particular block. And this same and you can color these graphs by specifying which block you want to land in. And that's how you actually color these two graphs, and they're exactly the same. So, of course, the question is, how do you explain this coincidence? Well, of course, it's not a coincidence, but what's one way to look at this? And that's where categorification comes in. Not that I know of, I'm not sure. So yeah. And so here's where categorification comes into the picture. So I need to define this category script R, which will be the direct sum of all these RKs, which is very natural to consider all the reducible representations of all the symmetric groups at once. Let me define some functors on this category. Let me define E to be the restriction functor from R to R, so it takes the representation of Sk and restricts it to Sk minus 1. And of course, I also have induction. Let me call that F. And does 1, and this is a representation. And of course, Frobenius reciprocity tells us that these guys are adjoint. Now, let me do the following thing. So what I want to do is I want to take E and break it up into a bunch of subfunctors EI and do the same to F. I want to define an element which I'll call X, which will be a morphism of this function E. And so the way I define it, well, let me consider the element XK, which is going to be living inside the, how do I want to do this, say the group algebra of SK, and this will be the sum I equals 1 to K minus 1 of these transpositions, IK. Okay, so this it's not hard to show, well, there's easy ways and harder ways to show this, but it's not hard to show that this lives inside the centralizer of SK minus 1 inside SK, and this is a pretty well-known element. It's called the Eustace-Murphy element. So because it lives inside the centralizer, I can think of this as acting on restriction from what I have, SK to SK minus 1. And so now I put all these elements together. So I'll define X to be, hold this, not an abusive notation, just this putting all these, I guess maybe 0. I don't know whether I did 1. And now this acts on this functor, on this big restriction functor. So this, you can think of this as a direct sum of these restrictions, and then injects K acts on a particular one. And now, by adjunction, plus, I guess, plus meta embedding, I obtain some X check, which will be living inside endomorphism on F. Okay? And what I can do with this data now is I can decompose my functor E's and E and F. So, for instance, I can define EI of some representation sigma to be the generalized eigenspace of this X corresponding to I. So this will be, just define it rigorously, V and sigma such that X minus I to some high enough power kills V, something big enough. All right, and you have to prove that E is the direct sum of these functors, EI, as I ranges over Z mod PZ. And similarly, you can use X check to define Fi, and you get a direct sum of F into Fi. And And then the results, it's also theorems. I'm doing a very like sort of baby case of a very general theorem. Maybe the first person, although I'm not really sure about the history so well, but maybe the first person was Bernowski, is that this data of this category and these functors, EIs and FIs, is a categorification. Of this basic representation B that I defined earlier. And so what does that mean? That means if I take, I can take the growth indie group of this category R, complexify it, and there's a canonical isomorphism between these vector space and B, and moreover, this is an isomorphism as G modules. So here I have the G action that I defined earlier. Here I have these functors EI and FI that descend to operators on the growth indie group, and they exactly give me the same representation. They satisfy the right commutation relations, it's an irreducible representation, and that representation is isomorphic to B. I mean, all that has to be, of course, none of that is obvious, but one proves these things. And moreover, I can define EI tilde to be EI and then taking the SOCL, and FI tilde to be FI and taking the SOCL. And what you get is that if you look at the set of all the simple objects in R, this is some set, plus these functors, which end up being operators on this set. So these EI and FI tilde takes an IREP to another IREP or to zero. This is the crystal structure of B. And so, in some sense, this gives us a nice way to understand this equality that I wrote up there, that I started with. It says, well, this equality somehow has one particular representation on the left-hand side of some Kac-Moody algebra, has all the representations of the symmetric group on the other side, and here we see that, in fact, we can, in a very precise way, construct that representation from all those representations of the symmetric groups. And so, that's that. So infinity for me would be, I guess, infinite by infinite matrices with finitely many non-zero entries. I can take it like that. I mean, I want the guys that's generated by EI and FI, and I'm sort of a little confused about the terminology, which exactly is the right way to say it. Where? Oh, E, when P is zero. So what's the problem? What do you? I mean, that's true. It's an infinite direct sum as functors, and any particular object is not infinite sum. Okay. So. So that sort of is my motivation, and now I want to. Get to the second part of my talk, sort of the main part. And so this is, I'll call this the category M. And this is about this connection between this G and the general inner groups. Okay, and so my aim here is to construct an analog of this category R for the general linear groups. So what I mean here, I want to construct in some canonical way, I want to consider all the representations of all general linear groups at once. And in particular, I would like to have an analog of this theorem, this categorification theorem, on this new category. So that's what I'd like to do. And so let me introduce some notation. So Mn will be the category polynomial. So in fact, the world I live in is a polynomial representation. So the polynomial representations of GLNF. And of course, here I also have this restriction functor, which goes from Mn to Mn minus 1, let me just call this R, restriction. And because, so the way I restrict, I have my GLN, and then I have a sort of a GLN minus 1 cross GL1 as a Levy subgroup, and I restricted that GLN minus 1. But then, of course, that GL1 commutes with it, and so I have an action of GL1 on this restriction, right? And so this gives me a decomposition of restriction into subfunctions RI relative to this action, the action of this GL1. In particular, I have a function which is R0, which takes a representation V, takes the GL1 invariance, and thinks of this, if this is a GLN module, thinks of this as a GLN minus 1 module. Because it's polynomial. That's true. Thank you. Is that here? And so, VC is special. I mean, it's an extreme vector. It's killed by all these EIs, and so it is special in that sense. But there are other copies of this basic representation inside Fox space. In fact, infinitely many. So in that sense, yeah. So in that sense, it's not special. But I'd like to choose this particular one. Where was I? Okay. Yeah. So I have this functor R0, and so I have, for instance, I can start with mn plus 1, take R0 to mn, keep on going down to mn minus 1, all the way down to, say, m1, and this goes obviously infinite and to the left-hand side, and I can take the limit category of this diagram. So definition 1, define m tilde. It's not going to be exactly what I want. Be the limit under these functors of all these categories. This is some big category, which is going to take together all these representations of GLN and somehow glue them together and think of them all canonically together. And so let's think about this category for a second. So what would objects in here look like? So if I take V inside my M tilde, V is going to be some sequence of representations and some data, where here Vn is a representation of GLN, and alpha n is the data that glues them together. So an isomorphism from R0 Vn plus 1 to Vn. And then you can have to write that morphism is also pretty clear. Suppose I take V and W inside my M tilde. I'd like to talk about Hom space between them inside M tilde. So an element here, F, will be some collection of morphisms, n equals 0 to infinity, where, of course, Fn is GLN math from Vn to Wn, and will satisfy some compatibility with the other data, so it satisfies more compatibility. Just some commutative diagrams. So this is my first approximation for this category, this analog of R for the general linear groups. Okay, let's look at some examples here. So let's look at some examples of objects that live inside this thing. For instance, I have sort of a unit object which just glues together all the trivial representations of all the GLNs. This would be an object, of course. I have something which I'll call ST for standard, which takes the standard representation of each of these GLNs, also glues them together. So here I'm suppressing the other data of alpha n. Sort of obvious, but I mean, it's pretty clear that if I take the GL1 invariance in the GL1 in the bottom right-hand corner of this Fn plus 1, I get Fn, and I have to attach this data into this object. Okay, I can do something like, this is a tensor category, that's pretty clear. I can take the tensor K of this thing, which another way to think about it is to take the k-fold tensor product of each of these standards. Another object. Let me do one more. I can look at the exterior algebra of this standard object, which will be taking the exterior algebra of each of these Fn's. Also, they satisfy, if you take R out of the n plus 1 exterior algebra, you get the nth. So, yes, absolutely. It doesn't work. What I'm doing is not going to work otherwise. That's the whole point. I mean, the point of thinking characteristic zero, I want to glue, so take some lambda, some highest weight for an irrep, for some GLN irrep, and I want, you know, once n gets large enough, I want to glue all these V lambdas together. But if I take R of V lambda, I don't get the, you know, the corresponding representation parameterized by lambda for the GLN minus one. But if I take R naught, I get exactly that lambda. That's the point of taking the R naught. So let me make an observation here, which is that if you look at these objects, the last one sort of sticks out because these guys, all these representations are degree zero. These guys are all representations of degree one. These guys are all representations of degree k. But here, as n goes to infinity, the degrees of these representations go off to infinity, and I wanna that's bad for me. I wanna take those objects that don't have this property. And so I define this is my main category, which I'll call M. This lives inside my M tilde. And what's that? Yeah, how the center was acting, sure. I take M inside M tilde to be the full subcategory consisting of finite objects in this sense. Okay, and this is going to be, my claim is that this is going to be the analog of R for the general linear groups. So let me just make a comment here at this point that, in fact, this category in a different manifestation was actually quite well studied before. It's equivalent in a canonical way to something called the category of strict polynomial functors of finite degree, which was introduced by Friedlander and Suslin in the 90s to study completely different problems. And so we didn't know that when we were first doing this, but it came to light later that this is something that's actually quite well known for some time. But this categorification perspective is new. So, so let me talk about the analog of this theorem for this category. So I want to define E's and F's again. So let me define F, some functor from M to M, and this will take an object V here and map it to V tensor, the standard object, something very similar to what we saw in Professor Serganova's talk yesterday. And of course, I'd like to do an analog of this for M. I'd like to define a functor that takes an object at tensor with a dual of the standard, but because I live inside the universe of polynomial representations, tensoring with a dual representation is not good. It might take me out of there. And so I need to do a sort of artificial fix, which is as follows. I take an object here, and I want to apply E to it. What do? I take R1 of Vn plus 1. This is some Vn plus 1, remember, is a GLN plus 1 module. I apply R1 to it. This is now a GLN module, and this is how I glue them together. So another way to say this is I'm tensoring with the dual of the standard and projecting out to the polynomial part. But this is much more convenient for us to think about it this way. And then I want to define an analog of this X inside an action on E. I want to define an analog of this, and so I needed some sort of analog of these useless Murphy elements, and these comes, not no surprise, related to Casimir operators. So let me define X. Not that X. Xn to be the sum from I equals 1 to n of Xn plus 1i, Xin plus 1 minus n. So this is some element which lives inside the universal enveloping algebra of GLn plus 1, and one shows that it commutes with a GLn cross GL1. Okay, so this is the difference of Casimir's, which is very similar to what the USS Murphy element looked like, because it's a difference of the sum of all transpositions for the SK minus the sum of transpositions for the SK minus 1. So it's not very much an analogy. And because because this commutes with the GLN cross GL1, I can play the same exact game, and I can define X to be some of the collection of these XNs, which is going to act on my function E. It's going to commute with this R1 action. Okay, and so I forgot to mention a little proposition here. It's important in this game is that these guys are adjoint functors.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky and you don't have to think about the universe limit stuff, you can just apply it to the sky at the most every time you go through the beat.
So these limits here apply F, I just cancel with standard, right? Which, what does that mean? Standard is just a collection of all these guys, and V is some sequence of representations, and each one I just tensor with the standard representation, like you said. Here, what I'd like to do is take each one and tensor with a dual representation. That's no good because I live in polynomial and I do this slight fix. Does that answer it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've defined this X action on this E functor by adjunction. I get an action also on F. And then I can use these to, in the same exact way, decompose my functors by taking generalized eigenspaces. A priori, it could be any element. It's just a computation. Yeah, it's pretty easy. Yeah. So, I have all this data, and you may not state our theorem. Which is as follows, this data of this category M and the subfunctors F, EI, and FI is a categorification of foxes. So the analog of this situation for R, we put all the representations of the general linear groups together, you get foxes. And it's the same exact thing. I think what this means, if I take the Gothic group of N, complexify it, and then look at the induced operators coming from these functors, they satisfy the right relations for the Chevalier generators and all that stuff. And in fact, it means much more. I'm not talking about the whole Chuang-Ruke theory that we also did. That'd be too much right now. And also, there's an analog of this statement here. And it's essentially the same. So if I define EI tilde again to be in SOCL composed with EI, and FI tilde to be SOCL composed with FI, just like we did before, then the set of simple objects in M, which I'll just call here M, and these operators, again, recovers the crystal structure of Fox space, the Mistra Milo crystal structure. Of Fox space. So if people, you know, if instead of looking at symmetric groups, let's go to the Clerc-Quintibone, we're looking at tensoring with standard modules and general linear groups and asking what is the decomposition. Well, that's a hard question. Let's take the SOCL of this thing, and they could have constructed a graph from that data and then seen that that graph is the same as a crystal graph for Fox space and asked why, and then you'd come up with this answer. That's our main theorem, and let me sort of come back to what I started with, which was that cartoon that related those three objects, and talk about that. So part three of my talk is sort of about duality, sort of formulated in R from this perspective. So what I want to do is think about Chauvel duality as a functor that goes from the category M to the category R. Remember, R is a direct sum of rep SKs. And I want to formulate Chauvel duality as some functor between these two categories. And in fact, it's quite easy. You take an object here, right, which is a sequence of VNs, and or what we do is the normal thing that you do with Chauvel duality, which is you consider these sort of multiplicity spaces. HOM, GLN, VN, tensor K, FN. Right? Now, this is, of course, an SK module. That's the Schwab-Alvey. And the data that comes, if I'm suppressing this data, these alpha N. But using that data, I can construct a direct system where I fix K and let N vary. And so I can take the limit of this direct system, and this is, again, some SK module, and I take the direct sum over all K. This gives me sum of representations of SK. This is an object inside R. So Schwab-Alvey duality is now a functor, and so let me put this all together. I guess I can do it up here. And the theorem is that this functor S, so the Schwab-Alvey duality functor, S is a morphism of categorification. So just like you can categorify representations, you can also categorify maps between representations, which means you have a functor, and a functor has to, these things have actions of all these two categories have actions of the EIs and FIs, and you need the functor to commute with these actions in some appropriate sense. That requires a lot of data, but you can sort of probably imagine what that means. It's just have a bunch of commutative diagrams of functors corresponding to each EI and FI. And so that's a morphism of categorifications. Of course, you can decategorify this morphism, ask what do you get, and the statement is that this categorifies the sort of the standard projection from Fox space to the basic module. So in fact, it's not clear, but it's not obvious from the definition, but the Fox space is semi-simple, and you can project onto the basic module, and there's a standard projection the way I defined it, and this Schwab-Alvey duality is exactly the categorification of this projection. I'd say that this diagram here, once you know this is a morphism of categorification, it really encapsulates the relationship between all those three objects that I started with. So I have a functor, this is something about GLN, this is something about SK, saying it's a morphism of categorifications really connects everything, the structure to the G. The Casimir algebra. So that's a good place to stop there.